Hello and welcome to Grace Unscripted, where we share stories of the people in and around Grace Church without any script, just real, raw conversations about life change through Jesus. I'm your host, Audrey Wallace, and today our guest is Holly McLaughlin. And Holly's story is really a picture of community, of what it looks like to not have community, of what it looks like to lose your community, what it looks like to gain your community, and how all of that can come together and build new life and new hope. And I'm gonna steal a line she says later, but I want you to listen to this, maybe rewind it and listen to it a few times because it's so worth saying. Her words she shared, "I see exactly where he was," along the way throughout her story. Hey, Holly.
Hi.
Welcome to Unscripted.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for wearing my favorite color.
You're welcome.
She has on this beautiful green dress with a matching green bag, which I'm delighted by. It's like when your favorite color, for me, when my favorite color is around me, my eyes like bring happiness into my brain. Does that make sense?
I wanted to bring you joy today.
You did.
I just felt it.
You're off to a great start. Like it just literally, like I don't know, there's probably some kind of chemical in my brain that's being filled by seeing my favorite color in front of me because it's the right shade of green too. So thanks for that. Well, I'm looking forward to getting to know you and I would love to start at the beginning. I'm curious, are you an Akronite? Did you come from the Akron area? Did you grow up here?
Kind of. So I was born in Akron.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was three, so before I knew anything in Akron, we moved a couple hours south of here to a tiny little rural one-stoplight town named Bloomingdale.
Okay, I've never heard of that, but it sounds fancy.
Yeah, it was very quiet. We lived in a little subdivision, trusted and knew all of our neighbors. Mm-hmm. We were three doors up from the volunteer fire department. Mm-hmm. Rode our bikes around the subdivision and like just, it was a very safe, joyful time. And my parents, they took my brother and I to church. We had a church that we went to on Sunday and I don't know how small it was, but I want to say like 40 people is pushing it that went there, but
adults?
It was like, yeah.
Or like total kids and adults, you think?
I would say 40 on Christmas.
What?
With like adults, but then like kids were a little more.
That's a bit fascinating, even on the like, I'm impressed standpoint that there are probably some very faithful people then in that small community that stuck together and kept that going.
Yes.
And like, was the pastor, priest, what denomination was it?
It was Presbyterian.
Okay.
Which I think they called it a minister when I was a kid.
Right, okay. I'm like, what's so weird here? Was the minister even full time or was this like,
I have no idea.
A side job, secretary named Mary, like organist?
I remember like first hearing and understanding the term of having a manse or like the little house off to the side on property.
Okay.
So, I mean, he lived there.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Would come over and...
Okay, so was that part of your upbringing? Like, was that a big part of your life, going to that church and being involved in it, or was it just like a Sunday morning thing?
It was mostly Sunday mornings and then just any, like, community activities, which I don't remember being often, but my mom would do the church bulletin on a typewriter and, like, make copies on their copy machine.
Oh, my goodness, I love that.
So... Yeah, we had little Christmas plays. And so.
I can, like, smell it. I can smell a church like that. Like, it just smells like the church I grew up in. You know, there's a little bit of must, a little bit of, but a lot of love and, you know, people connected in unique ways.
Those metal folding chairs in the fellowship hall.
In the fellowship hall with the fish fry dinners and the spaghetti. Oh, wow, what fun. Did you have, like, a youth group or, like, any kind of a children's ministry, the little felt boards, Noah in the Ark?
So I would say looking at kids in the church ranging from infants up to middle school, I remember, like, no more than 12.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, like,
total.
All in the same program.
Yeah, all in the same room.
Yeah, like, kids were just...
You just try and teach... each kid on the level that you're on.
Yeah.
But it was all right. Like, it was a safe place. We could run around. We knew every nook and cranny of that church.
Yeah.
And Yeah.
So that's in Bloomingdale.
Yes.
Did you go to the public school there? What'd you get into?
Yes, we went to public school, and it was a small school as well. Like, there were 4 classrooms for each grade, mm-hmm. I remember, and we had preschool through 6th grade in the elementary school mm-hmm. when I went there. I had a good elementary school experience, mm-hmm. and my mom led our Girl Scout troop back then, and so we had a nice community of friends, and
Did you have a dog and a white picket fence and like a blossoming tree in the front yard? This is sounding very like dreamy.
We had 2 cats. I loved our old house too. My dad, he built the front porch steps and also built like a matching, I don't know how, like the decorative wood cutouts on it, but it matched this like little thing on the side of the house that hit our trash cans. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I remember that being a big deal when he was building that when we were growing up, and like had flower boxes out front and swing set in the backyard. And
amazing.
But we could just run through our neighbors' yards mm-hmm. to our friends' houses back then too.
Mm-hmm.
So
awesome. Okay. So when you were a kid, what did you think you were going to be when you grew up, and what were your dreams and aspirations?
I was probably going to be a ballerina, a Pink Power Ranger, a teacher. I wasn't really sure. I don't know. I was very content there. Mm. And so I talk about that because, like, my brother and I just had a whole conversation about this. So he's 19 months older than me to the day.
Mm.
And so we were only a year apart in school.
Mm-hmm.
We fought a lot as teenagers, but, like, we were just super close, and we're inseparable now, too.
Mm.
That's
awesome.
But he and I just met and talked about it. That's what I'm remembering. He and I just took a trip to visit our hometown
mm-hmm.
And just drive all the routes we used to ride on the bus, or drive the back country roads that we took to get to our friends' homes, or eating our favorite hometown pizza,
mm-hmm.
things like that. So that was very nostalgic. But when I finished 6th grade, I was 12, my dad was told he could either take this promotion and move toward the Akron area, or he'd be out of a job.
Mm.
And so that was really hard. And I know, my parents, they tried looking for jobs. I should also mention my mom, she was a stay-at-home parent, and she mm-hmm. would watch kids in her home.
Oh, wow.
So, like, during the summers, I would help her watch
supermom mode.
Babies yeah. and toddlers, and, help keep them entertained while she made lunch mm-hmm. and, help clean up and things like that. So, the transition, when we moved up here, we moved to Norton City Schools.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember just, like, starting to spiral, and that was more of a traumatic time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because of the move, leaving friends, leaving the neighborhood that you, the
dreamy
neighborhood.
That felt safe and warm and comforting.
Intimate and tight-knit.
Yes.
Mm. Okay. So that was after 6th grade, going into 7th grade?
Yes.
Like that summer? It's a pretty formative time. There's a lot of changes happening in a gal's life at that time. Oh, dear. Okay.
So, and I believed in God, because we would go faithfully every Sunday, but I wouldn't say I had a personal relationship
mm-hmm.
at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we moved up here, we got connected quickly into another Presbyterian church,
mm-hmm.
Which I didn't really know anyone. And I'm really grateful, like, it gave my parents a sense of community, And I at least got familiar with some of the same faces that I would see each week. But mm-hmm. I really was disinterested at that point
in church, just
going through the motions.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you're still going, you're in school. Like, did you acclimate to school? Did you start going to Norton Public?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so not, maybe not as small as your other school, but not a huge school system.
Right. It wasn't horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have any friends, didn't have any connections. There was a lot of tension between me and my mom. I blamed her, and I'm not quite sure why.
Mm.
I think it was frustrated because I just didn't feel heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting to translate that into not really feeling loved or cared about, or that my opinion matters. I just, I don't know, got off on a different path and sought love elsewhere.
Okay.
I don't know if I can talk about this on Unscripted, but I'll pause in case he needs to edit this out. But I chose at a very, like, sadly young age to be sexually active.
Mm-hmm.
And so that followed me through middle school, through high school. So I had a bit of a reputation. I'm sure people talked. I felt that people talked.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put up walls and didn't care because it was more of a survival mechanism. Mm-hmm. And so it's an important part of my story.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was 18 or so-ish, a friend had invited me to go to a church. It was a college-age ministry, similar to Collective, I would assume. I've not been to Collective. I'm a little older than college age now.
I'm sure they'd have you.
But I started going to this place. They called it 707. On Wallings Road.
Yes.
And I would go every Sunday for a while, and like just the difference in what I grew up with the, it was very generationally appropriate for my parents' age, with the hymnals and the choir organs. And the organ.
Metal
and
chairs and the fellowship
the pews
hall.
And that's wonderful for them. Mm-hmm. I didn't connect to that. So, like, walking into that full-on, lights low, loud music, heavy worship, hands flying in the air, like, it was the best shock.
Yeah, like, almost like a culture shock. Like, you go to a different country, but it's your own country, but it's a different way to worship. But it was a good shock for you?
It was wonderful.
Okay, what'd that feel like? Try to go back there and, yeah.
So I also really loved the idea that it was targeted toward college-age students. And so, like, someone trying to relate to things that made sense to me today instead of preaching on the same passages, using stories that are relatable to 40s, 50s, 60s, some things, that's perfectly fine. But connecting to me in my moments of struggling with relationships, struggling with materialism, struggling with being addicted to my phone, like things that are more relevant.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I started like making the connection and getting into my Bible and feeling that personal relationship with Jesus. And so even though I was baptized as a baby, I made the decision at 18 to get baptized. And I know, you know, that feeling, like just when it's like, man, he wanted me, like he's calling me. And so, that was just a wonderful time in my life.
Well, that sounds like the exact
anecdote.
I always get these two words mixed up, sidebar, but antidote, like the opposite, the cure for.
Antidote, yes.
Like a balm to the wound of your pain, of feeling unseen, unheard, and to see, to feel seen, to feel this is relevant, this is accepting me and my generation and speaking to us in our language. It's those subtle things that are huge and then open the door for other things to happen. So, yeah, the way that you explained 12-year-old pain to 18-year-old brightness, those two things really, the darkness and the brightness, right?
Yeah. Like,
there you go. Wow.
It was a major change.
Yeah. Do you feel like your world around you noticed, or did they know about the darkness, or were you pretty, like, put on the happy face, go to church on Sunday, your family wasn't really necessarily aware?
My friends knew everything going on with me. My family, I never really talked about it,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay. Like, I really know that they did all they could and all they knew how to do in the moment.
All you let them do, right? Like, you probably didn't make a lot of space either.
No, I didn't. And so I'm grateful for them. I love them. They're still very involved in my life today. So
now we have something new at 18. And so your friends who were more aware, do you feel like they saw a change? And the friend that invited you, like, how did that all play out?
Yeah, so the friend that invited me is actually an ex-boyfriend. So that was
a good thing to be severed,
yeah. But it's wonderful that I showed up there and I started taking other friends with me because I really enjoyed it and wanted to share that. And so actually two of my friends got baptized with me on the same day. So we went there for a while. But that was a little far of a drive. Mm-hmm. And so at some point, I kind of just started tapering off. And that was fine. But that, like, newfound relationship kind of shifted where my attention was not really there anymore. It wasn't that I stopped believing. It was I still felt like I could do things myself. And that's, again, part of my story, part of how he's shown up continuously. Like, I look back now at my 13-year-old self, and now that I'm a mom, I just want to cry for her so badly. But looking at today, I know that, like, all of the ups and downs, the hills and valleys, if you will, those led me to where I am. So I was about 20 then when I started dating my now husband. We met at work. We didn't go to church regularly. He had some sort of faith, but also just had a lot of questions. And, like, if he didn't have proof of something, he's not really willing to commit. And that's okay. That's his story. But we got married not in a church. We didn't really have God a part of that at all. And we just kind of lived our lives for us. And we finished our schooling and got our jobs. And after year one of marriage, there's that little pink line. And we were expecting our first. My son, he's 10, almost 11. Made me a mom, and I love that boy so much. That all went well. God blessed us so much. And then when he was about 18 months old, I saw that next pink line. And I lost that pregnancy at about 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so that was, I don't know that I ever really talked to anyone about it in that moment. Like, I, of course, told my husband that it had happened. I had told the people that I had shared my news with that, oh, nope, not happening. But that took me to a really dark place. And my gosh, I did not get the help I needed in the moment. That's for sure. Like, I look back on that time now and it's like, man, if I at least had a community at that point, I wouldn't have gone so dark. But at that point, like, I still have a toddler that I'm supposed to take care of. So after that, we still hadn't been going to church. We still had no community.
Yeah, what would a community have looked like at that time for you? You have coworkers, maybe some. Did you go to college after high school, or?
I have an associate's, but okay. I didn't like get
no dorm like, plugged girlfriends into, or anything. Okay.
So
high school leftover friends. What does that look like?
I'm still to this day best friends with, I need to go back and add her into this story, actually. So, my best friend Erica, lived in that subdivision where we would ride bikes, and she was in my Girl Scout troop. We have been best friends since we were 3 years old.
In Bloomingdale?
In preschool.
Oh, wow.
In Bloomingdale. And I talked about my parents, like, they would invite her because I would want her to come spend the night. And so they would, oh, well, is it okay if we take her to church on Sunday morning? And so it got into a routine that she was coming with us every week pretty regularly. And nights that she didn't spend the night, they would still pick her up in the morning and take her with us. And so, like, she got connected that way because she didn't really have that type of influence in her life. Now, me at that age, I wouldn't have pieced those things together that they didn't really teach you at my Presbyterian church to be evangelical as an 8 year old or however old I was.
But you were doing it.
But I just wanted to play with my friend.
Yeah.
So she
came
and got the messages along with it. But so she was still, she's still been there throughout the whole time. She's one of the ones that got baptized with me.
And whoa, at 707?
Yeah.
In almost Cleveland?
She lived with us for like a couple years while she was going to college up here.
Oh, wow.
And then moved back home.
Okay.
So.
Wow, that's a special time that she was up here for all of that. That's really cool. That's like deeply bonding.
Yeah.
Deeply. Wow. I just heard this thing talking about community and how it takes 200 hours to develop the most intimate layer of friendship. Think of Jesus with James and John and Peter, his closest. He, you know, intentionally poured into those three as compared to even his 12. And for us, it would be like 200 hours, which is especially nowadays, you know, you're riding bikes, you got a lot of 200 hours, but now our lives, we don't got 200 hours to spare to build that. They called it I want to say it was an anamkara, a soul friend, that deep soul friend that you've gone through stuff with. You've hit the peaks and the valleys alongside and talked through and walked through that together. So Erica is your anamkara.
I'm going to need that written down to look up later.
I can share it with fascinating. You for sure. Absolutely.
So she's a big part of the story too. So she knew everything that was going on. She was helping all she could from afar. I had another friend, Brittany, that she and I became friends in middle school, high school. So she knew me through some pretty dark times. I still remember she sent me a bouquet of flowers on what would have been my due date.
Oh, that is thoughtful. That is deeply thoughtful.
Yeah.
Wow. So you have this darkness again. What does recovery from that look like? What does even identifying it, speaking it, anybody reaching you?
So my natural course of action is just go straight in denial. Mm-hmm. So back at work.
Mm-hmm. Keep moving. Yeah.
Yeah. I got things to do. Mm-hmm. We waited 6 months before we tried again. And I was blessed with my daughter, Evelyn. Mm-hmm. And she, oh my goodness, she was the easiest baby.
Oh, that's a wonderful gift after what you were had gone through.
She was just such an answered prayer in a time where I was angry with God. Mm-hmm. Angry for allowing him to let that, angry at him for letting that happen to me, allowing me to go through that. Not for once thinking about why that was his plan, why he needed that child more, why he needed my attention, that I wasn't walking with him. So, so we are now getting on as a family of four, and life is wonderful. And we talked about it and talked about it and talked about it and agreed, okay, three's a good number.
Go for another one.
And when I was pregnant with Evelyn, it was, yes, I just tried to suppress my feelings and move on, but, like, that pregnancy was a lot more tense. So after a miscarriage, there's not the same level of enjoyment in every step. So I made it through that pregnancy fine. I got pregnant after Evelyn, when she was probably about 18 months old, and I lost that one at about 7 weeks along. And so I just, like, crawled back in my hole. And so, it's still hard to talk about now, but I'm a lot better than I was, for sure. But it's like, I've got a family to raise. I have a full-time job. I don't have time to slow down. So cry in the shower, let it out there, and go back to it.
Sounds like practical multitasking.
Right. You just compartmentalize it.
Keep it in the shower. Close the door.
And so.
We're joking, obviously. That's a terrible way to do it.
No, I know. That's. I joke about it because it's a coping mechanism. And so I don't fault anyone around me for not noticing. But it was just a hard time. And so instead of waiting after that one, I was just kind of hollow and said, oh, well, what's going to happen is going to happen. We'll just try again. I got pregnant again, like, the next month. And some of those, like, just horrible thoughts crept in. This is going to sound awful, but it's exactly where I was.
Okay. There's space here for that.
I convinced myself that the child was already gone. I convinced myself I'm carrying something that is just going to pass. I didn't even tell my husband I was pregnant. I used to dehydrate myself. I just wouldn't drink water because I was so afraid to have to go to the restroom and afraid to see warning signs.
Yeah, yeah. It triggers all those things that would trigger what you've experienced multiple times.
So I only told my husband I was pregnant right about 8 weeks because we were supposed to go on a couple's trip to Vegas. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I can't explain to him why I'm not going to have a drink. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, what? You're pregnant? That's so exciting. And I'm like,
That's not the word you'd necessarily use.
But that fifth pregnancy, technically, that was my Sylvia. Mm. So we were, just kind of taking it day by day with that one. And I went to go visit my friend Erica in Bloomingdale. I don't know, I was probably about halfway through the pregnancy, and I was just spending the night, the weekend there, and she's like, hey, is it cool, can you come to church with us in the morning? I'm like, sure. And I should mention, too, like, any time I had stepped foot in a church since I had kind of stopped going, I would just cry. Like, I would start to tear up. Like, I knew, I felt something was missing. Like, the one time that I had asked my husband to go to church with me, in that window, our house had gotten broken into. And everyone was fine. So, stuff is just stuff. But I'm like, it was in December. I'm like, I need to go to church. Please come with me. And I went there and just, like, I couldn't keep it together.
There was just something there. There was something pulling. That tugging right on that tear duct valve.
And I remember going to, like, my son's preschool performance where they were, like, singing a song about snowflakes falling down. But it was at a church preschool, and so we were in the sanctuary. And I'm like, why am I tearing up? He's singing about snowflakes. But I think it was just, like,
the spirit.
Spirit moving.
Constantly pursuing and drawing, trying to draw you close.
So when Erica took me to her church, while I didn't connect really at her church, and it's far away, I couldn't go to that one anyways, bless her for just, like, calling me out of, I know you're mad. God's not the one to be mad at. Like, He's waiting for you to come back.
Something like that to you.
Yes. Wow. She's like, you need to go to church. You need to find a church. Wow. So the next week was Easter Sunday. And I showed up here with Calvin. I took just my son. My husband was not interested in going. And that's okay. And I didn't really know what to expect. And I mean, thankfully, we got in here in enough time. This is 2019, so before the build-out and everything.
Before the gym, before the COVID, before...
Yes. So we got here in enough time to be, like, out in where the lobby is now. There was, like, I don't know, maybe 50 chairs set up there. So we weren't even in the sanctuary.
We were just in the overflow.
I was sitting on the end row because I'm like, man, I've got... five-year-old, four-year-old at the time.
He didn't go into the class.
I had a four-year-old and I was pregnant here at church, just the two of us, three of us really with the one on the way. And we stayed for service, but it was overwhelming with how many people were around. It wasn't really the week to get connected. So I came back the next week with Calvin. I took him down to Power Kids and came back up to the sanctuary and listened to the message in peace. And I was like probably the prime churchgoer that they're looking for of you show up and it's like, okay, so what's next? Okay, I fill out a connection card. Okay, what's next? Okay, I do a discovery group. Great. That's done. What's next? Okay,
so you can plug in. Just like an HR person, you got your boxes and you're checking them and following the process and the rules.
Yes.
Wow.
So I got connected, and then after Discovery Group, they got me connected to a life group. Mm-hmm. And this is really where all of the healing starts.
Let's go.
Like the week before I was supposed to go to this new life group, I was 7 months pregnant, mm-hmm. and had some sort of weird medical event. That I still don't have great explanation on, but I was run through all of the tests. Thankfully, we were both fine. We had some follow-up appointments, but that was enough of a scare. Like,
yeah, that sounds terrifying to someone like you.
Yep.
At that point, yeah.
So the next week I showed up on the Caruso's doorstep. And they were... they weren't really accepting new people in their group at the time.
Oh, theirs was a little full, I heard, back then, and, you know, always.
It was. And I got connected to them through the mailman at our office.
Tell me everything. I gotta understand this.
So the office I work at, Shane Myers would deliver the mail.
Yeah.
That was his route, and I had worked at that office for 7 years at that point, and he was there 4 days a week dropping off our mail, and I would buzz him in the door, say hi, how's mm-hmm. the family, and he would wear Grace t-shirts occasionally, mm-hmm. and so, like, I saw him one Sunday and I went up to say hi, and he asked how I was doing, and good to see you here, and he's like, oh yeah, you should get connected to a life group. And I'm like, well, what's that? It's like, oh, yeah, I'm in one. It's the Carusos. And so at Discovery Group, mm-hmm. they're like, okay, well, we can get you connected to a life group. I'm like, oh, I heard one, the Carusos. I didn't even know the Carusos at the time. But they kind of fed me in there.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are listening that may not be aware, this name, this mystic name we keep saying, is one of our pastors here, Pastor Joe Caruso and his wife Mandy, who host a life group as well, or hosted a life group. So that's why we're kind of giggling over this, because a lot of people joined that life group, and it was just a floor. I mean, from what I understood from the outside, a very flourishing group, community, yes. if you will.
It was. And so they accepted me in. I showed up on their doorstep. He emailed me. Hey, yeah, this is the address. Show up at 6. We kind of hang out and eat, and then we talk, and then, yeah, you can check it out. If you don't want to come back, there's no hard feelings, but mm-hmm. we'd love to meet you, and just very casual about it. So I went by myself. Mm. And the first night I cried in front of a group of bunch of new people, all strangers.
Awesome. Great start.
Right. I'm just like connecting. That's mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah. Peeling back the layers though. That's what does it. That's what creates bonds, is actually being vulnerable and real rather than perfect. Turns out.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah.
So I explained what I was struggling with, how I had been angry at God, how I recently gone back to Grace and had started a lot of healing, and it had been good. And that summer I met so many people that just like poured into me, cared about me, checked on me, texted me, shared a funny article with me or video or mm-hmm. something, checked on me and my kids. Like, and I met another, key friend here, Michelle Michael. She, her and her husband had 3 kids that were like the same ages as my 3 kids. And they, I mean, we just hit it off. And so... okay, fast forward a little bit. So Andy mm-hmm. was coaching game day. Mm-hmm. And that was Calvin's first year. He could really play game day. Mm-hmm. And so Calvin and his buddy Ezra mm-hmm. were on the same team, coached by Andy.
Awesome.
And I had Also, yes, I delivered Sylvia in that time.
Excellent. Everything came out okay. I didn't mean to say it like that, but
yes,
after the health scare and everything yes. was good. Okay.
She's very healthy, wonderful. And it was definitely evident to us that she was going to be our last. Like, we're not going to take any more risks. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting myself through that anxiety again. Mm-hmm. We somehow got blessed with three very healthy children, mm-hmm. and it was wonderful. And mm-hmm. our life group, they showered us with a meal train and, like, really took care of us. Mm-hmm. So then we did game day, and then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't play the last game, but we loved game day. My husband enjoyed showing up to the church for an event, because he hadn't been coming with me. Mm-hmm. And I just loved that program so much. And then COVID hit, and then we're like 6 feet apart, and online services, online life group, but
just trying to disfigure everything that you just had built, like trying to pull that apart. Were you able to keep the pieces connected through these virtual options and different things?
If you couldn't tell already, I'm typically an extrovert. I found ways, and stayed connected, and the Michaels. That family moved. They were feeling called to serve in Philly.
Yeah.
And Michelle and I got into a daily devotional. Mm. And we would do it over Marco Polo.
Oh, wow.
So
Marco Polo is a great app for those that don't know. It's not just a swimming game. It is a wonderful app, especially for the long distance connection.
And that was perfect. And so I mentioned, like, we still do devotionals every day.
Oh my God.
For like 5 years now.
It's another Anamkara. You have two. That's amazing.
I'm so fortunate.
She's awesome too. That's great.
She is. And so we've gone out to see them on vacations and they're wonderful. Okay, so fall 2020. My husband out of the blue. This is like God working. I don't know if you remember it. They started a series, The Gospel, in October 2020.
Okay.
And, like, that was back when you had to RSVP seats
for
COVID.
Yes.
And my husband asked me on Saturday night, he's like, do you think it would be okay if I went with you tomorrow?
And you said, no, please don't.
I'm like, you can have my seat or I will kick someone out for you.
Literally, I will fight for you. I will break through the roof and lower you down on ropes.
He showed up.
Wow.
And I asked him, like, I understand this may not be your thing, but if you could at least commit to the series before you make a decision.
Very wise, yes.
And he did. And he's been coming with me ever since 2020.
Do you have any knowledge or understanding of what stirred that in October of 2020?
No. It was God. It was a God thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole family's been coming. Since then, I've gotten involved in game day.
Love that.
I've coached my son's basketball team first, second, third, fourth grade.
Wow. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. And I coached my daughter, my youngest, Sylvia. She wanted to cheer last year. So I coached preschool, kindergarten cheer.
That's got to be the cutest thing on earth. Bows bigger than heads. I love it.
And I just love reaching people that way and showing love that way of you don't need to be perfect. You don't need to have things figured out. He's just going to meet you right where you are.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to use you. He's going to use your story. He's going to redeem any pain and let you help others. And teaching the boys that it doesn't matter if you win or lose. God's not going to love you any more or less.
That's great.
The girls spreading joy and just sharing their spirit with others. And I'm also a Girl Scout leader for like my mom. Daughter now, my middle child.
Yeah.
Just like my mom was. So we do a lot of fun things too. And so it is now, I'm 38. Mm-hmm. I work full time and I coach and I lead and I just get my hands in anywhere I can in that sense. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to stay connected with my biblical community. Mm-hmm. I've made a lot of other great connections through that life group, which is since they're no longer mm-hmm. meeting, but we're still trying to gather mm-hmm. somewhat occasionally, some sort of schedule just to make room for each other and still walk alongside each other.
Yeah, sticking together like that through the long haul is really where the depth, even if hardship comes up, even if something hard happens, like sticking together is really the depth. And when it gets really good, it feels bad, but it actually can be really good in the end too. Wow, that's incredible. And it sounds like you're making that space that you talked about when you arrived at 707 and you felt seen and you felt like I can walk in here even with my story, even
all
with
that baggage,
my life,
all that even, shame.
Yeah, versus what you felt when you walked into pews and organs and things like that. You walked into this new space you'd never experienced before. And that's what we hear time and time again with people walking into game day is like, I didn't know that a church could be like this. And it's just a community basketball program, but of course we're very intentional about it. And so you're creating that space that you needed when you were 20 and that you needed when you were 12, and you're giving that to others now too. That's beautiful.
I so love it too, like serving in that way. I mean, so many parents are just grateful and I'm like, why are you thanking me? This is like the best the best thing I can imagine doing. I don't even know how to play basketball, by the way. I've asked each year now, I'm like, can you pair me with someone who knows what they're doing?
Yeah, they do a great job of that.
I'm great with parents.
Because they need two people. And
great with kids.
Yeah, somebody to coordinate and to wrangle.
I don't know how to show them how to do a layup.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, and even being in HR, you're very attuned to people's talents and their skill set, their natural gifting, what you can teach versus what is natural. So I'm hearing this in you. This is like a natural thing for you. You're looking at this like, how could anybody not want to do this? Well, it's because you're functioning inside of all of your gifts that not everybody has. So when they come up to you and say, bless you and thank you, because I couldn't do this, they're going to be over there doing a different form of serving.
Right.
That you're going to be like, how could you possibly do that form of serving? Thank you much. And it's everybody fits into their, as we at Grace call it, shape and do your thing. And that's how God designed you to fit into the body. And that's how we give those gifts back to him. That's so cool. I can see it like on your face. Yes. You're shining right now. You're glowing in your beautiful green dress.
You're so sweet. Yes, I'm very much, I'm a peacemaker on the Enneagram, mm-hmm. which also fits well in HR. Mm-hmm. And I very much am for encouraging mm-hmm. and helping people find that joy when they can't find it on their own.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because that's what you seek. That's what you desire and what gives you energy to get out of any ruts or dark places. So why would you not give that to somebody else? It's like a life-saving gift that you were able to receive through all these different avenues between the church and the life group and the friendships and Erica telling you, get to church, girl. Like, I'm like thinking about people in my life like, oh, dang, do I need to say something like that? And what? There's always the what-ifs. Well, what if I this or what if she that? Well, guess what? What if she soars like Holly did, you know, in response to the challenge of a friend. And another thing I was studying recently was talking about like confession to friends. And if you're able to confess something out loud, one, it takes the power away from Satan, who wants to trap you and keep that locked inside of your shower stall and
right.
let it all go there and not come out. But when you expose that, and when the friend treats it with love and forgiveness and grace, that they so fully receive themselves. And this is the phrase I heard, that if someone confesses sin to you, you can say in response, I have never loved you more than I do in this very moment. Because you can see the inside. you're given the gift and you and hold that with tender care. And these Anamkaras, these soul friends, your Michelles, your Ericas, anybody from your life group that can be trusted to hold these things with tender, loving, forgiving hands. And they can just say, you're still beautiful and you're still loved by God. And that heals wounds, you know. It's that antidote.
Antidote. Yes. You got it right this time.
The balm that heals the wounds. Yeah, it's so good. But it takes 200 hours. It takes, or at least, it takes 1 hour and then two and then three. Like, don't focus on the 200 and how could I ever get there? Focus on the one. How could I show up on a weeknight that I don't feel like I've got the time? How can I show up to this life group? And how can I spill my guts and cry and then come back again next week? And then next week, and slowly over time, that's where that community is built, where all the healing happens.
Yeah. God has blessed me so much. And like, now that I've had that relationship and I've been in His Word and just in prayer and taking that time, I see exactly where He was every step of the way. And it's, I can appreciate all of the people for what they tried to do when I wasn't willing to hear it. I can, that's helped heal.
Mm-hmm. If you are a tattoo kind of gal, I think you should put that right there. I see exactly where He was. Or if there's like some cool Greek sentence or something like that that looks cool, but like that is the beautiful statement. I look back and I see exactly where He was. That's amazing. That's maturity. That's like getting into that depth of like David, right? Like I can sing out in my pain and then my depth of sorrow, but I also can see You and I can ask You to stay with me and to bring me back toward You. Wow. Well, any other thoughts or like things you want the world to know about your story or things to take away?
It's worth trying. It's worth putting effort into. Mm. It's not worth sitting there crying in your shower. Mm. It's not worth trying to do it on your own. Mm-hmm. I've made plenty of mistakes, and I still make plenty of mistakes. I still am a sinner. I'm still imperfect. And I know I'm still going to keep screwing up, but I'm trying now. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to teach my kids. Oh, my gosh. My sweet Evelyn, my 8-year-old, she got baptized about a year ago.
Oh, gosh, I can't imagine the swell of a mother's heart.
My joy from that was just, that's enough to carry me for another few years, like, for my child to know Jesus. And at least, I know we're all going to have our hardships, but if she at least knows exactly right back where to go, I pray that for all my kids, for my husband.
She's probably bringing her friends the way you did, and shining her light back into her world, too.
She is. She wanted to invite all her friends to her baptism, and she actually just saw the splash bash on the board, because there's another one coming up. She's like, Mom, look. I'm like, oh, you want to go watch more kids get baptized? She goes, no, I want to do it again. I'm like, oh, sweet girl.
Childlike faith.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, as you know, we have our Unscripted Worship playlist. Yes. So Unscripted Worship on Spotify, for those listening, you can look that up and make that your favorite worship playlist, because it's filled with songs that our guests bring with them to either reflect their story or just one that they love to cry to in the shower over or just rejoice to in the shower or the car. You know how good we all sound in those spaces. What song would you like to add to our Unscripted Worship playlist?
So I didn't mention how much I love Christmas.
Oh, is this a thing for you? How many Christmas trees do you have?
So I only have like one giant Christmas tree, but we bought our house partially because it has a room that we could have a really big Christmas tree in.
Like a vaulted ceiling kind of thing.
Yes. But the Joy to the World, the Phil Wickham arrangement that mm-hmm. also has that callback to the hymn, Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I just...
love that we have a Christmas song on our worship playlist now.
Yes, please. I have a playlist on my iPhone called Holly's Jolly Christmas.
And it's too perfect. Were you born near Christmas?
No.
I just was talking to two Hollies together, and they were both talking about how they were due around Christmas, and that was why their mom picked Holly.
I was born in late March, so that didn't click for
Very
me.
Very unique.
But just the hope of Christmas is just, like, I'm one of those, Christmas is like a three-month season, like, yeah. Even just...
And all around the year in our hearts.
Yes. And just that, let every heart prepare him room. Like, mm-hmm. I had not prepared room for him for so long. Mm-hmm. And that joyful, joyful, we adore thee. Like, that was one of mm-hmm. my favorite hymns growing up in the old Presbyterian churches. Mm-hmm. I love the melody and... let hearts unfold like flowers before thee. Mm. Like, it's just, it hits me in such a different way now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a first. You're certainly the first to bring that song to our list.
Seriously?
And No Christmas songs have ever been added before. I know. This is crazy. So I appreciate. I mean, I guess every Christian song should be a Christmassy song in some form. But,
kind of.
But that is a really fun version. I love when there's like those hybrid mixes that kind of mash up maybe things we remember from the hymn books, right?
Yeah.
And things that they do now. So it's a perfect one. And it expresses a unique part of you too with your love of Christmas. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing the deep and dark parts like you shared. And I'm so glad that you have the bright and high spots now. And I love to watch, to hear you giving that back to others along the way.
Yeah. If it resonates with anyone, mm-hmm. then it was worth it.
Yeah. Well, and with that, Holly has offered, if anybody heard this and connects with any part of her story, there's so many pieces within there that someone could connect to uniquely. And you want to talk to Holly or really anybody on staff, you can reach out to us. Our email is unscripted@graceohio.org, and I can get you in touch with Holly and or anybody, like we said, at Grace Church, because we'd love to walk with you if there's something here that struck you and you find yourself having questions or just wanting to learn more. We're here for you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Holly.